The Monty Show, Monday, September 17, 2018. Hello.
Hello.
That's Jake. I'm Monty. Make sure you find the show on Twitter, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on Twitter. Do I dare admit, Jake, that I went 0-for in the NFL and I am clinging to the Chicago Bears to shut out in the NFL?
The Bears. Mitchell.
Now you know tomorrow's Tuesday. We'll have a ton of college football for you where I went 4-0. Thank you, BYU. Thank you, BYU. Today it's all NFL. We have got a ton to get to. We have got to talk about Antonio Brown melting down. Josh Gordon got traded to the Patriots. Yeah, we got to have a conversation about that. But there were so many good games yesterday, Jake. We should probably just get right to work on the Vikings and the Packers. What a game of up and down ridiculousness. This felt like to me.
Absolutely amazing. I felt like it was as advertised, and I said that like 10 times during the game. We felt like this was just a juggernaut battle. You know, the Packers don't have a great offense right now, but it's Aaron Rodgers, and that's all you need to know for the offense. I felt like their defense did a pretty good job, but at the end of the day, I can't help but just say Kirk Cousins came out and conquered. You know, there was so much adversity in that game, the missed field goals, so many opportunities to put the game away, and it just didn't happen for them, and they finally were able to close the deal.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is about the Vikings specifically, is that now you can stop asking if Kirk Cousins is worth the investment that they made. Because there is no doubt in my mind that 35 of 48, 425 yards, four touchdowns, a pick, and 118.8 rating against your division rival in the Green Bay Packers is absolutely worth the money that you paid. Not only that, I don't want to say you won. You should have won a game where you rushed for 68 yards.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's really impressive.
Well, and that's who Kirk Cousins is, right? You don't need to there's no need to run the ball. If you're having a bad day running the ball, put it in the guy's hands, send Diggs and Thielen down the field, and figure it out.
Yeah, and amazingly, Laquon Treadwell can't catch and still had a big play. And they still wound up tying this game. And obviously, everybody today is talking about the Clay Matthews penalty. And I want to get your thoughts on this. First of all, yes, that is a ridiculous call. And yeah. I know today that the NFL clarified that, and they have doubled down and said that that's a penalty. You cannot, quote-unquote, scoop and pull a quarterback, which is to say Clay Matthews wrapped his arm around Cousins' waist, lifted him off the ground, and slammed him down, according to the NFL.
Yeah.
I say he sacked the quarterback, is what he did. He hit him. It caused an interception. It was a great play by Clay Matthews. It should not have been flagged.
Yeah.
But it was. And I think, based on the verticality that I got coming off the couch when they threw the flag, I was all in favor of that because my favorite team is a team playing the Packers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt like while that was not a good call, they were consistent with it. There was one against the Packers, you know, one against the Vikings. I felt like they were consistent with it. And we say this all the time in sports. If you're going to make controversial calls, make sure you're consistent with it. If we disagree with it, make sure we disagree on both sides of the field so that it's even. And I felt like while Clay Matthews sacked the quarterback, that's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, you lifted him up and then you pulled him down and drove him into the ground. And while it was borderline, that's 2 weeks in a row for Clay Matthews where he made a mistake.
And he's gotten that same call. Yeah.
Let's not forget about week one. That was not a good play. That was clearly roughing the quarterback. So I'm just saying Clay Matthews needs to work on that.
Yeah, the game, I think, lived up to all the hype. It was entertaining. It was high scoring. But I have real concerns about the Vikings. And now it really is the offensive line and their depth at corner. They gave up some third downs that Green Bay converted to first downs that were just awful. Blown coverages, no communication. That is, the corners worry me just as much as the offensive line, because when you have a guy in Dalvin Cook that's only able to run for 38 yards, they're just not moving the defensive line. They're not creating running lanes for Dalvin Cook or Latavius Murray. It's a little bit concerning to me watching that game. Now, obviously, they cut their kicker today and signed Dan Bailey, the former
Cowboy.
Great
move.
But they didn't lose because the guy missed kicks. The facts are, and when you go back to this game, they're going to say, well, that guy made a field goal. They won. I get it. They lost this game because they didn't have a sustained run attack, and they gave up some just terrible third down conversions to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think while we're talking about the line, let's not forget who the Vikings have coming up. They've got the Rams coming up, and you better be ready for that Rams defense. You know, they shut out the Cardinals this week. Dominant performance. Cardinals did not cross the 50-yard line until 30 seconds left in the game. So I'm just saying, if you have questions about your line, you better figure that out against, you know, this week against the Bills.
Yeah.
An awful team. Figure it out now and be ready for the Rams.
Well, and we'll get to that Rams-Cardinals game in a minute, but who's the better team there? Are you convinced that the Vikings are better than the Packers?
I think, yeah, I am. I think the Vikings have more top end than the Packers do. I think when the Vikings have, you know, a crappy offensive line, for lack of a better word, they can still get the job done. And that's the fascinating part. And I get that you can point to the penalty or missed field goals, but at the end of the day, Kirk Cousins made more plays than Aaron Rodgers, and that's what won him the game.
Well, we'll find out November 25th in Minnesota. When the Packers come to the Twin Cities to take on the Vikings, I think this was a game of details. That's really what separated the two clubs. By the way, one other hit I do want to talk about yesterday, the Cam Newton hit.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hit that they're trying to get out of the NFL. This Clay Matthews hit in the Viking game, that's the hit you need in the NFL.
For sure.
The one on Cam was dirty. I think it should be a fine and a suspension. And this hitting thing in the NFL is a real problem. We saw it in the Utah-Washington game with the targeting calls, just ruining the game on two what I thought were really good hits. This Clay Matthews penalty yesterday became the conversation piece of the weekend for the NFL.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
100%.
And I worry that football's dying. And you don't love football the way I love football. I'm a passionate football fan. I grew up being a huge Walter Payton fan. He was my idol as a kid. I love football. But I hate these calls.
They're ticky-tack. I mean, they take the bravado out of the game.
They take the passion out of the game. Because now, when a big hit happens, you have to look at the official.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to wonder. Clay Matthews, I don't know what you say to Clay today, because I thought he executed perfectly, and he said it best this morning. You just got to do it exactly the way you did it yesterday.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. They're inconsistent with it, right? And this is the big controversy about it. They are inconsistent with, when you look at it in volume, they make some calls and they don't make others, and it puts defensive ends, linebackers, speed rushers.
But isn't that the nature of the NFL? It happens so fast.
It did happen so fast, but I think that's why you got to have a more black and white version of the rule. In the Utah game, he led with his helmet. He used the crown of his helmet, and it specifically states you can't use the crown of your helmet. And so while I didn't love the call, that is the rule.
You can at least live with that.
I can at least live with
it. The first one.
Yeah, the first one. I can live with it. But then you look at the Clay Matthews hit, and his helmet had no part of that play. That was him muscling up on Cousins and taking him down. And I think that matters in a game. It certainly matters for the Vikings when they hit Aaron Rodgers.
Well, and I think Clay got his head off to the side. He didn't use his body weight, and that's what everybody was talking about. But I at least appreciate that they came out with this, you know, Tuck Rule-esque scoop and pull definition today that nobody
had
ever
heard
that. Of.
I love that description, though, because that's what you're doing. You're getting up under Cousins, you're scooping him up, and then you're pulling him down as you tackle him. You're pulling.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to drive somebody down, this all comes from the Aaron Rodgers collarbone injury. I mean, that's where this comes from getting driven into the ground and the Packers ruining the season.
How about that yesterday?
Yeah.
Those two talking.
Yeah.
You know, it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. The Steelers have a bad taste in their mouth. They lost to the Chiefs yesterday, 42-37. The Chiefs averaged 8.3 yards per play. How about this? They only faced third down five times the entire game. Pittsburgh had it 11 times. That's how high power the Chiefs offense were. And we're going to get to Mahomes and the Chiefs in a minute. I think we're watching the meltdown of this version of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
It's coming apart. You're undisciplined. I don't know how many people realize that the Pittsburgh Steelers lead the NFL in penalties. 24 penalties accepted. 24 accepted, right? 209 yards. That's number one in the NFL. Their defense is missing tackles. Their defense is blowing coverage. They really miss Joe Hayden in the secondary. They have got to find a way to get him healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, they just really, really miss him. And you, what you really want is this Pittsburgh defense to be ball busting. What you really want is this Pittsburgh defense to be the one getting penalties for, you know, hitting guys too hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's who they've been. That's their signature. They're no longer the Steelers from the Ravens-Steelers rivalry when it was Ray Lewis and Polamalu and Hines Ward and those classic names just
those
getting
big
after.
Rivalries.
Yeah,
yeah,
man, I mean, yes. That's when Big Ben was in his heyday, and now we're in a different, in my opinion, we're in a different phase of the NFL. There's no longer, you can't go out and just drill a guy. That's not going to happen anymore. And so I think when it comes to cold weather cities like that and those really just rough and grinded out kind of rivalries, we miss those now.
And I think
if you're Mike Tomlin, I'm not sure that you're going to get fired, but the pressure is starting to mount.
There needs to be a new voice, a change of some sort.
Yes.
But it's funny you bring up Ben Roethlisberger because I don't see a guy in decline. I see a guy that's playing just fine. He threw the ball 60 times yesterday. Completed 39 of those, 452, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He got sacked one time.
Yeah.
And that's good, efficient quarterback play. I look at the fact they can't run the ball, their offensive line, again, they're struggling. And I think part of their running problem, this has nothing to do with Le'Veon Bell.
Nothing.
They were behind. The Chiefs were scoring so many points so often. I mean, Kansas City was up 21-0 after the first quarter.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We were tied at the half because Pittsburgh answered with 21 of their own.
Yeah.
This offense is not the problem. It's this defense. And the issue now, and I don't know how many people saw this in Pittsburgh on Monday today, Antonio Brown got into a huge Twitter spat with a guy that used to work for the team, talking about how Antonio Brown should be thanking Ben Roethlisberger for his career. And that if he hadn't gone to Pittsburgh and Ben Roethlisberger, he would never gotten paid, and Ben got him paid, which I think is ridiculous. I think it's really difficult to be a wide receiver at that level in this league.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's always going to be some part of a wide receiver's success that is the quarterback. I mean, we see this. This conversation comes up a lot with Tom Brady and anybody who we've never heard of having success for the Patriots. It comes up all the time. And so I think when you say, well, you know, put AB on Matt Ryan's team, how would he do? Put him on, you know, Tannehill's team, how would he do? Well, he's probably going to put him on Trubisky's team, how would he do?
Put him in Seattle with a guy that isn't getting the ball down the field right now. I think he makes Russell Wilson a better quarterback.
But you can't take away from AB the fact that he makes catches other guys wouldn't make.
And see, the two-way street is what I think a lot of people like to forget. They say, oh, well, Juju Smith-Schuster, look at what he's doing. Well, listen, it's a two-way street. Juju and AB are one of the most lethal combinations in all of football. So, yeah, they need a guy in Ben who's big and can stand in the pocket and still deliver the football, but they also run after the catch. AB's one of the best run-after-the-catch wide receivers in the NFL.
And at the end of the day, let's be honest, a quarterback isn't necessarily throwing it to the wide receiver. He's putting it in a spot where a guy can go and get it.
Yeah, and AB is a great deep ball catcher.
At the end of the day, in order for him to get his numbers, he's got to catch the ball. Now, I understand that a quarterback putting it in a more ideal
Diggs and Cousins.
Perfect. Thielen.
Look at that dime yesterday.
The Thielen catch at the corner of the end zone. That's Thielen earning his paycheck. Cousins threw it to a spot. Great spot, great throw. Probably should have been picked by the safety, but I don't know what he was looking at.
But it wasn't.
And it wasn't. And so at the end of the day, I just say, hey, that's a two-way street. The ball's got to get delivered. Thielen's still got to catch the ball. AB's still got to catch the ball and make guys miss to get in the end zone.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the beginning of the end in Pittsburgh. And it's because the defense is coming apart. I think they miss, and I know it's crazy, I think they miss James Harrison's leadership on that team. Several guys have talked about that. You know, they are seeing that TJ Watt as a young guy is going to be inconsistent. He's going to be amazing one week, not amazing the next week. And you look at guys like Morgan Burnett, Stephen Tuitt, hell, even Bud Dupree.
Yeah.
Those guys have to now play at this exceptional level, especially in a shootout, And when they're getting beat and they're down 21-0, it's gonna roll downhill.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about Tomlin's, you know, tenure and how much longer he's gonna be the head coach there, you just look at all these little fires that are kind of starting. It starts with Le'Veon, then you have Villanueva coming out and talking how they don't miss him and nobody's losing sleep over it, and then you've got all these just little things that start adding up, and then eventually you get your ass handed to you in week 10 and you're kind of over it. And then that's when everything just rolls downhill. And, yeah, and we've seen this time and time before, and this is not the last time it'll happen.
Oh, by the way, they have kicker trouble, too. They missed a field goal and an extra point out of a veteran in Chris Boswell yesterday. So, look, I am going to pay very close attention to what's going on in Pittsburgh. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes had a day yesterday that we haven't seen in a very long time in this league. Mahomes, 23-28. He missed five passes yesterday. You realize that he had five incompletions and six touchdowns. He had more touchdown passes yesterday than he had incompletions. He set an NFL record by throwing 10 touchdowns in his first two games.
Yeah.
This guy's unbelievable. And it all goes back to this discussion about Josh Allen and Josh Rosen and
Sam Darnold
with the Jets. Do you start your rookie or do you make him sit? Patrick Mahomes is the son of a former major league pitcher named Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes played with Jack Morris in Minnesota in 1992. The story out of Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback column today, or I think it's Football FMI, Football Morning in America, whatever it is now, yeah, on Pro Football Talk. But Peter told a story about how Pat Mahomes went up to Jack Morris in 1992 as a rookie and said, "Hey, Mr. Morris, I'd love for you to show me how to throw that split finger fastball of yours." And Jack Morris, now the Hall of Famer, said, "F you," literally said to him, "F you, you're trying to take my job next year," and treated him poorly and wouldn't show him how to throw that pitch. Fast forward to Alex Rodriguez's first year in Texas, where you have a young Patrick Mahomes, I believe he was 9 years old. A-Rod signs a $252 million contract with the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, man.
Pat Mahomes is on that team. He brings 9-year-old Patrick Mahomes into the clubhouse. Unsolicited, Alex Rodriguez takes young Patrick Mahomes down to the batting cage, teaches him how to hit. You know, hey, look at what I do. Look what you do. Takes him out into the field for batting practice. Works with him on film. Like, mentors Patrick Mahomes. And today, Patrick Mahomes will tell you, hey, you know what? That A-Rod situation really helped me. And what else helped him? He says that Alex Smith, spent all of last year teaching him everything that he knew. Alex Smith, who knew Patrick Mahomes was waiting to take his job, taught him everything he knew about being a quarterback.
And why is that valuable today?
Well,
because Alex Smith is a tactician. but let's go past the numbers. Alex Smith is a tactician. He doesn't have the best arm in the world. He's got to beat you with his mind, right? And he's got to execute every single down. So when you don't have a great arm and you got to beat the defense mentally, you give that ability to Patrick Mahomes, who's got an absolute cannon, who's gifted physically, and all of a sudden he can start seeing things and think ahead of the defense. He's going to put up monster numbers.
Yeah. Well, it is a big conversation in the NFL because we're talking about guys like Aaron Rodgers, who sat behind Brett Favre.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of really bad rookie quarterback play yesterday. I mean, you can go ahead and point to Josh Allen, right? Because he didn't look terrified yesterday. He just looked like a rookie. 18 of 33, 245 yards, a touchdown, two picks, rated 63.
Yeah.
They lose 31-20 to the Chargers. I look at Cleveland with Tyrod Taylor, and you have their prize rookie in Baker Mayfield now sitting behind a polished veteran in Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, and Baker's shown that he could probably start over Taylor.
Sure.
Which is what makes it even more significant.
And now let's go to Arizona, where they're terrible. They got boat raced yesterday, and they have Sam Bradford starting in front of Josh Rosen. And so the calls today in the media are, well, you got to start Josh Rosen. Rosen's got to play. And I'm telling you, no, Rosen doesn't have to play. Why? You know that Rosen at some point this year, through attrition in, well, it's Sam Bradford, Sam's going to get hurt and Josh is going to play. Why would you rush that?
Yeah.
Because the offensive line is terrible. They don't have any wide receivers. They have zero speed on the outside to speak of.
And Fitz hurt his ankle. That should be said.
Well, ankle and all of that, all of it together, they don't have talent on offense. David Johnson is struggling because they don't have an offensive line and they don't have talent outside. Why would you want to stick a rookie quarterback into that mix? It's a huge mistake, frankly. Yeah. There's no reason to do that.
And I think if you're a fan out there, you got to understand, specifically Cardinals fans, and I work with them every day, and we talk about it almost every day. Hey, man, why would I go to a game? Well, put Josh Rosen in there and I'll go, and I'd love to go, and I'd be excited, even if they were awful. And it's like, bro, you just got to understand. Josh Rosen is your long-term fit. He's the guy that's going to take you to a Super Bowl, you hope. So the idea that you would put him in there and risk an injury or risk, you know, the biggest thing is mental, right? Let's be honest. The biggest issue here is putting a guy in and having him get discouraged and having an awful performance and like, oh, man, I'm overwhelmed. I'm not who I should have been. You know, that's really what we're talking about here. Let Sam Bradford take the beating.
Yeah, and we're watching Monday Night Football right now with Mitchell Trubisky. He's making terrible throw after terrible throw into double and triple coverage in the red zone. Like, this is quintessential why you don't start rookies. You can't start rookie quarterbacks.
Decision.
Yeah, like he's throwing into the end zone into double coverage, giving up 3 points. Now the Bears are up 7-0, and now they get a field goal. They're up 10-0. But they almost gave away those 3 points in a league where 3 points is nothing.
Yeah, and that would have been his third interception of the night. So, I mean, I just think he's still at that point where those kind of decisions tell you the game is moving too fast for him. He's rushing.
And now he's got this elite defense. Khalil Mack tonight is dominating.
Yep.
And your rookie quarterback, who's been thrust in now year two, granted, but he still looks like a rookie.
Yeah.
So all of this to say, Patrick Mahomes is dealing because he had a really good situation with Alex Smith. Bucks and Eagles, how about this quarterback situation? The Tampa Bay Bucks are getting play out of Ryan Fitzpatrick that I think by any measure is shocking. There's really no way to spin this. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody. You're a guy that has DeSean Jackson on your fantasy bench.
Yeah.
And DJack is tearing it up for them because, again, Ryan Fitzpatrick has 402 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, and he's rated 144 in a shootout against Philadelphia. The Tampa Bay Bucks win 27-21. They're 2-0. And now all of a sudden, Jameis Winston has one more week to sit through his suspension. And everybody's like, well, Jameis is the guy when he comes back.
I don't think so. Why would you fix something that's not broke?
No idea.
You're 2-0 against two teams you shouldn't have beat, and that'd be the Saints and the Eagles. You absolutely annihilated the Saints, number one. Number two, I did not think that they were going to be that good in week two again. Like, just a duplicate performance.
There's no BS. Philadelphia Eagles are a very, very good defensive team.
And I got to say, I mean, while DeSean Jackson, I always thought he was going to be a bench guy, a guy that, you know, is just a big play dude, like maybe gives you 10, 12 points on a long, outran you kind of touchdown. The guy is outrunning you on a consistent basis and getting open. And that's who he's always been, but now he's doing it more consistent, and Fitzpatrick's delivering the ball.
Well, he's spreading the ball around. You look at the guys that scored touchdowns yesterday, your two guys, DJack and Mike Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Evans, 10 catches, 83 yards, and a touchdown.
Solid.
O.J. Howard's a guy that people have been questioning in Tampa. Well, not anymore, not this year. 3 catches, 96 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, he's getting real production out of a wide receiver core that has lacked. He used 7 different receivers yesterday. Oh, by the way, they did this, and they only ran for 43 yards.
Yeah.
Well, he carried the club.
How many times are we talking about, hey, ton of passing yards through the air, very little running yards? And that's why I just say, you're right. This is a passing league. Teams that can really light you up through the air are going to be really good. That's why the Vikings are good. That's why the Packers are good. That's why the Bears are not good.
Is that why Carson Wentz is coming back next week?
I mean, I think so. I mean,
he's going to start week 3. They announced that today. And Foles wasn't bad. 35 of 48, 334, a touchdown. Rated under 100, though.
He doesn't light it up. He's nothing special. He gets the job done. And I think we were saying that about Fitzpatrick in Tampa for the longest time, and now he's lighting it up. They're executing finally. So Foles has it in him, but Carson is the upper hand. He is the choice.
Yeah, it's a really interesting situation. Quarterbacks in this league are really important. I would not go back to Jameis Winston. I think he has broken the trust of that organization. Why would you then turn around and go back to him? I think it would be a significant mistake if you did that. And when I look at a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's everything that that football team needs. You're talking about firing your coach and Dirk Cutter because the team is sputtered and you're not good enough. Well, you're playing exciting, explosive football. You would love to be able to run the ball a little better, but you're playing exciting, explosive football. You're selling tickets. Tampa has an infusion of energy in the community to support the football team. Why would you then change that with Jameis Winston?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the best thing. You're not talking about anything off the field. You're not talking about Jameis having issues. You're not talking about Jameis doing something stupid.
You're not talking about Jameis at all.
We're talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick delivering on the field, showboating in the press conference, and going on to the next week. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, and I love it. It's what the NFL needs out of the Bucs. They don't need the Bucs to win the Super Bowl. They need the Bucs to be an exciting team. Football is good in Florida again. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just as simply as I can put it.
Yeah, I'm amazed at what Fitzpatrick has done. The post-game press conference where
Savage,
he took DeSean Jackson's sunglasses, jewelry, and jacket and wore it up to the podium. It spawned a new T-shirt that is just... You know, Fitz notorious because he looked just like Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Standing up there with the beard and the glasses and the gold.
He had the character, bro.
He looked just like him. So this Level 500 company that produces T-shirts put out this T-shirt for him. Like, I mean, it's fairly remarkable what Ryan Fitzpatrick has done. He's become, I'm not going to say he's a phenomenon, but he is definitely... He's a storyline in the NFL. He's one of the more intriguing quarterbacks playing in the NFL right now.
Dark horse. That's who Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's a dark horse right now, man. You don't know if you can count on him the whole year for the entire schedule, but you know you can count on him for, you know, the week three. You know, we can count on him to come out and give us another great performance. And I think when we're talking about, like, you know, character and what the storylines are on a club, you know, you look at the Steelers and everything's negative, 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 negative. James Conner's got a nice story going for him in his personal, you know, life.
Yes.
That's really the only positive coming out of that camp.
Yeah, and obviously Conner was the subject of a SportsCenter feature about him surviving.
That literally made me cry, bro.
Yeah, he survived cancer. He befriended a young boy who had cancer and ultimately lost his life to cancer. And he befriended a wrestler who, in a freak wrestling accident, broke his neck and is paralyzed. And, like, he's shouted all these people out, and this young boy that died of cancer looked at him as an inspiration. Like, it's unbelievable, his story, in the middle of a hurricane in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Probably a bad analogy at the moment. But in the middle of a storm in Pittsburgh, he's a really good story. Not a good story, the Arizona Cardinals. A really good story, the LA Rams. I don't know what you make of the Rams. I think they're the best team in the NFC, and I know that we disagree on this to a certain extent. But until somebody goes and punks the Rams, including the Vikings, who I think are very close, I think the Rams are just too good defensively. Their DBs, their defensive line, everything you want in a defense,
yeah,
you've got that in the LA Rams.
Yeah, I mean, they're almost the new Legion of Boom, right? Like, they don't have that same swag that defense had, but you hear LA Rams and you think, uh-oh, we're going to have a rough day offensively. And I think when, you know, we were just talking about this when we were talking about the Vikings, the offensive line is rough right now. It's not reliable. You don't know what you're going to get. You don't get great protection, which means you can't run the ball, which means you're throwing the ball down the field against a great secondary. And so all of a sudden, the Rams, you know, when the Rams face the Vikings, they're going to have the Vikings in a chokehold several times in that game. Yeah. You're going to see 3rd and 15 a lot in that game. And so I just think you're right. I mean, I don't have any hesitation that the Rams are the best team or 1-1A with the Vikings. It just depends what you put an emphasis on.
And you know what makes them better than that Legion of Boom Seahawks team, and I think slightly better than this Vikings team?
Mm-hmm.
Their offense is lethal.
Yeah.
And you talk about the difference between, what is the difference between the Rams and the Vikings? The Rams have this unbelievably dominant secondary that is backing up an unbelievably dominant front seven. Ndamukong Suh is re-energized. Obviously, Aaron Donald is just busy in the middle there. I mean, there's all these guys up and down this defense.
Yeah.
And then you talk about the offense. That's a well-rested Rams defense because you're getting offense from Jared Goff. Frankly,
I like him a lot, man.
Well, I was amongst the guys who wasn't sure his first year in the league because he didn't look like a quarterback that could pull it all together, and now he has, and he's doing it without Todd Gurley leading the team in rushing yesterday. You're doing it with, you know, Brandon Cooks, who has been cast off from not one team but two now, including the Patriots. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. You know, he threw the ball well to Gurley, who had, I think, just short of 80 total yards yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You have this offense that can play short, they can play long, they can play ball control, clock control, they can score a bunch in a shootout. There's nothing this football team on both sides of the ball can't do.
Yeah.
And by the way, Zuerlein, their kicker, gets hurt. So what did they do? They had Johnny Hecker, the punter, make a field goal yesterday. I mean, it's everything you want. Oh, your kick returner's hurt? Utah State's own JoJo Natson. They sign him off the couch, literally. They call him and they say, we have a plane ticket. Do you want it? He said, yes. And he averaged 22 yards a kick return yesterday. Got a game ball.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The infectious enthusiasm.
The positivity.
Yes, that is the LA Rams.
Yeah, man.
That to me is unbelievable. And then, on top of all of that, what the hell were the Cowboys thinking last night winning that game? More to the point, I kind of now think that Dak Prescott's bought himself a couple of weeks because the heat on Dak had been pretty substantial because he wasn't this big-time, over-the-top guy. Well, what did he do? He came out last night and threw one right down the middle of the field to former Ram Tavon Austin.
Yep.
Threw a perfect dime. And it leads to a touchdown. Now, his numbers are not spectacular,
no.
But he only threw the ball 25 times. 160 yards, touchdown, rated 95. I still don't know if they can run the ball consistently because that offensive line is just a disaster.
Well, and that's the thing that I really point to. That team went from having the best offensive line in football to just not being very good on the offensive line.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a major thing when we're talking about Dak and we're talking about Zeke. Zeke can no longer do what he did because what does every good running back have? A great offensive line.
Yeah.
And I think when we're talking about where Dak is at in his performance, I think when you don't have a good offensive line, you see who you really are as a quarterback. Kirk Cousins is able to get the job done when he has just average offensive line play. And, you know, Dak's going to have to figure that out.
Well, Dak did. He ran 7 times for 45 yards.
Yeah.
And Zeke didn't have a bad night.
No.
You know, he carried the ball 17 times and averaged 46 yards or 4.6 yards.
This is a different brand of football we're seeing out of the Cowboys than what they were. I mean, when you played the Cowboys a few years ago when they had Dez and they had all these guys, you knew that it was going to just be a pounding with Zeke and then Dez was going to take the top off. I mean, you knew that's what you were getting into.
Well, and I think they're saving grace in Dallas. Frankly, is they have some emerging superstars on defense. I look at Jalen Smith. DeMarcus Lawrence is a guy that really stands out to you. I thought Taco Charlton played pretty well last night for a guy named Taco Charlton. I thought he played pretty well. Sean Lee was off the field for long stretches, but Leighton Vander Esch, I thought, stepped in and played really good football for him. So you're starting to see you've got a couple of superstars now defensively, and you've got this core of linebackers now that plays together and complements each other. We'll see if they can cover. I think that's another big-time question for them. Can they cover? But, hey, I like what I saw out of Dallas. Absolutely hated what I saw of the New York Giants. And my only question is at what point – and maybe you've come to that point, but at what point do you say, yeah, we need to move on from Eli Manning?
Yeah.
Because we are going to begin wasting Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Because that kid's a freaking machine.
Beast.
Oh, man. He's really good. Is Eli Manning a bad quarterback in this league? I don't think he's bad.
Yeah, I think that's probably the wrong word to use.
He's just too far down the road.
Yeah.
And this team, he no longer fits with this team because you don't have that Tiki Barber running behind a, you know, David Deal in a dominant offensive line anymore.
Yeah.
That's not who this football team is. They're an average offensive line. And you know, how many times are we going to talk about that tonight? There's a lot of average offensive line play, and I still maintain that this is because of all this read option crap that and the offense that we're seeing in college is no longer producing the beef up front. We saw with BYU and Wisconsin this weekend. Wisconsin's got some dudes up front that can play offensive line. Ohio State, we saw in Texas, mm-hmm. they can play offensive line. But on the whole, when you're looking at these run-and-gun, high-power offenses with quarterbacks that are running out, come on. That's not football. And so
it's not sustainable.
Yeah, you're setting up these offensive linemen in college to fail or be average in the NFL. And I think the style of play in college is really starting to bear out on the offensive lines. And it's problematic. And I think that's where a lot of these teams are. But when you talk about the New York Giants, I just think Eli Manning doesn't have the style that is needed. I think if you had a Deshaun Watson comes to mind. Patrick Mahomes is going to fit anywhere. But like Ben Roethlisberger is interesting. If Ben Roethlisberger's on the New York Giants, that's a much better football team because he can stand and he can deliver. Eli, yeah. You know, there's memes all over the place. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've already seen the cover image of Eli Manning on the ground in terror with, I don't know if you saw this today, Jake, but there's a picture of him just absolutely terrified on the ground in his face. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think he's too easily going down because he knows what's coming. So I think the Giants are in real trouble. I think the jury's still out on Dak and Zeke in Dallas because I'm not convinced. I think they could have gone and gotten a guy like Josh Gordon. I think that would have really helped them because they don't have outside
speed.
But
I don't know that Josh Gordon off the field works in Dallas.
I know he does not work.
And so I think if you're Dallas, that wasn't a real good option. I mean, yeah, it would be nice. Josh Gordon, the football player, it'd be nice to have him on the field. It'd be nice to be able to have a tall, lanky guy who can really run past a cornerback.
Before we get to Josh in total, surprised about your boy Blake Bortles?
No.
Well, you were on that bandwagon, and I thought he really put out for the Jags yesterday. 377, four scores a pick, 111 rating. They in Jacksonville on a very hot, humid day beat the New England Patriots 31-20. And again, I think this really just came down to the Patriots ran out of gas. It was hot. It was uncomfortably hot. And we saw guys going down. And, oh, by the way, I also am curious if the New England Patriots are going to be able to run the football on a consistent basis because what do they have? They have an offensive line issue.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what the Patriots morph into. But you're on the Jags bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah.
How heavily are you on the Jags?
I mean, I'm not. They're not on the best team in the NFL level for me yet. But I think of the Jags, I think of, hey, pretty solid defense. I think Blake Bortles.
Pretty solid defense.
Well, I mean, they're not the best defense in the NFL. They're not the Rams, and I don't know that they're close to the Rams yet. I think the Rams are on another level defensively. But I think the Jags. I think of a very, very, very reliable, solid defense that can get off the field on third down, even against Tom Brady. And I also think that the Jags are in a place where, you know, you have leaders on your team now. You've got Bortles on offense. You've got Jalen Ramsey on defense.
How about his performance against Gronk?
Yeah, you know, so and that was the matchup we were looking for. And so when you have a guy, and this is very much what Seattle wanted to do with Sherman. Seattle loved to just say, hey, Sherman, You're going to take away half the field.
Hey, Sherman.
Hey, Bud. You're going to take away half the field. You know? So I'm just sitting here saying to myself, Jalen's better because he can take the best player on your team and say, you're done.
You're out.
It's over.
You're eliminated.
And I think for the Patriots, you talk about that weak offensive line. You don't have Gronk, so where are you going to go? Oh, Hogan's going to burn the secondary on a play that – really, they should not have been beat on, but, you know, the Patriots are just that good. So,
but yeah, I look at their defense, Miles Jack. I look at DJ Hayden, AJ Boye, you know, like
Calais Campbell.
Calais Campbell, who's hurt. and played sporadically yesterday, played some, didn't. But Marcell Dareus, I thought, stepped up. Jalen Ramsey stepped up. I mean, they have enough guys out there who are able to get after the quarterback. Dante Fowler, obviously, you can't talk Jags without talking Fowler. I don't know. I think that defense is really good. You're right, it's not on the Rams or the Vikings level, but it's pretty good. It is very good. Speaking of the Patriots, they pick up Josh Gordon today from Cleveland for a fifth-round pick. I love this move.
It's worth the risk.
Yeah. Well, you have no risk because whatever happens with him, if he, you know, falls back on his addiction issues or whatever it might be, you cut him and lose nothing. But his upside is top three receiver in the NFL. He's still really fast. He's still got very good hands. And I think the biggest question is, can Josh Gordon go from a situation with no structure and no accountability to tons of structure, tons of accountability? Can he do what Randy Moss did? I don't know. But I think it's worth the effort. And I think he can, because I think he was stunned that he got cut in Cleveland. And if all the stories are true that he pulled a hamstring on a promotional photo shoot.
I just don't buy it.
Man.
I don't buy that. Well, I really don't buy that.
You know, the other thing that bothered me about this conversation immediately was, oh, well, he's using again. And it turns out he's not using again. And the Browns have acknowledged that it wasn't drug related. But that's, I guess he earned that. But it bothers me that that's the knee jerk reaction.
Well, I think any time that you go through what he's gone through and you're as storied as he is, any time there is an issue, any time there is a lack of character or a lack of discipline, you're gonna go right to, oh, well, did he relapse?
Yeah.
I mean that he's earned that. I mean, that's the kind of reaction you earn by doing what he did. And so I just say, look, I don't necessarily feel bad for you. I'm not surprised that's a reaction, but you're going to an organization where they're not, that's a no BS organization. You're going to a place where Tom Brady is going to yell at you on the sideline and say, do your damn job.
What matters in New England?
Winning.
That's it.
And the funny part about winning is you're going from Cleveland, where you weren't going to win, to an organization where a Super Bowl is on the line every year, no matter what. That's the expectation every year. And it's funny how that changes you when there's a realistic expectation of winning the Super Bowl. That changes you.
Yes.
It changes you.
Best and worst teams in the NFL. Who's the worst 0-2 team?
Because the Cardinals.
By the way, well, okay.
The Cardinals, there's no doubt about it. They're awful.
I think the Bills are pretty bad. I think the Bills are pretty bad. Their quarterback situation is dire. 0-2 means that you make the playoffs only 12% of the time. Are the Bills a playoff team? They're 0-2. No, they're not. Sorry. Are the Houston Texans a playoff team? First of all, are you surprised the Texans are 0-2?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
And well, I picked them to win and cover yesterday, so I'm stunned.
Hello. Maybe. I think that the Texans are just, they're always that team every year. And this is how I categorize them. Every year we say, J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, and now Deshaun Watson, and now the Honey Badger in the secondary. Why aren't you winning? Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. Well, at some point, you got to look at the common denominator. The Oakland Raiders are 0-2. I think we all get that. That's a rebuilding team that's not focused on this year. They're not the worst team in the NFL. The New York Giants are 0-2. I don't think they're the worst team in the NFL. I think you're going through a new head coach and the Eli issues.
If we're having
a
conversation that they can plug a different quarterback in there and be a solid team, they're not the worst team in the NFL.
Detroit Lions are 0-2. Nah, they're not the worst team in the NFL. They have too much talent offensively to be that. And then there's the Arizona Cardinals, who you're convinced. But there's one other team we got to talk about. Well, actually, two. Because the Bears could be 0-2, and the Seahawks could be 0-2. If the Seahawks go to 0-2, I don't think they're the worst team in the NFL.
No.
There's too much maturity there still. If the Bears go to 0-2... I think the addition of Khalil Mack and the way he's played, because he had a sensational first half, they dominated. I don't think they're 0-2 and the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah,
you're going to take Arizona. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills.
How are they going to win? Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree. I mean, I think for me the tough part with the Cardinals is that there is nowhere to go. Nowhere on that team are you finding success. For years, we've been leaning on Larry Fitzgerald. Hey, in times of need, go to Larry because he'll be open. put him in the slot now instead of outside because he's lost his step, but he'll still be open. So we can go to Larry. But at the end of the day, I just say, look, you don't have an offensive line. David Johnson is not who he was. You paid him money based on one season, and he hasn't been able to show out this year so far. I think Sam Bradford's going to get hurt, and we don't know what Josh Rosen is. I don't buy that Sam Bradford is going to give him the mentorship that he needs. I understand that Bradford knows that that's his role, but there is a certain point where the mentor has to be able to deliver the knowledge.
They've scored 6 points.
They didn't get past the 50-yard line till 30 seconds left in the game yesterday. That tells you what you need to know.
6 points. But then again, the Bills have scored 23. The problem is they don't stop anybody. They've given up 78.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it really just – this is an opinion-based thing. They're both awful.
It's very
they're
subjective.
Both awful. And you could even – the Bills could even edge this out because they have nobody at quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh Allen looked lost. You know, so at least the Cardinals have Sam Bradford. But at the end of the day, they're both awful, and it's very close.
2-0 teams in the NFL. The Dolphins, they're not the best team. The Bengals, eh.
No. Andy Dalton will mess up at some point.
Jacksonville Jaguars are 2-0.
Blake makes me nervous in big crunch time, but I think he's shown that
what happened?
Deliver.
That was supposed to be your guy.
No, he is my guy, but here's what I'm saying. The Jags are the team that's going to go far, right? They're going to get into the postseason. Yeah. Oh, pick six to end the season. That's what's going to happen.
They didn't let him throw it last year, and they lost. Yeah. This year, at least go out throwing. Here's a real contender for the best team in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, that's an offensive juggernaut. They give up a lot of points, but they score a lot of points.
I don't buy that they're the best team in the league because I think Tyreek Hill burned Tennessee. Or was it Tennessee? No, it was the Chargers. Burned the Chargers. And I think the Mahomes thing, while that is clearly not going to be the performance every week, it's very encouraging to see him have the ability to shred a defense.
Well, listen to the Chiefs' schedule, though. So you've played the Chargers. Not a great defense. The Steelers, not a great defense. Mm-hmm. The 49ers, not a great defense. The Broncos, okay, that's a little better of a defense.
Should still, realistically, you could still be 4-0.
And then it's October 7th, and you're home for Jacksonville. One
so
of the best
legit.
Defenses. Then you go to New England, then the Bengals, then the Broncos, then the so you're now, you're we're going to start to figure out, they're probably going to go to that Jacksonville game 4-0. Because I think they're better than the Broncos. It's in Mile High, but I still think they're better than the Broncos. But not to be a jerk about it. I just don't see – I don't see yet.
To me, it just feels like we're very, very high on this team, and they're going to come back down a little bit.
Well, and again, when you have a rookie, he's going to have that game.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. But Jacksonville certainly is in the conversation. I thought that was a real gutty win for Tennessee yesterday. They needed that desperately to go 1-1 instead of 0-2. And by the way, I think one of the other talking points in that division, it might be the best division in football, by the way, in the AFC South, the Colts are doing all right. The Colts are hanging in. They're 1-1. Andrew Luck continues to perform. Yeah. So the panic button that we were pushing there, you know, maybe not. The Broncos are not the best team in the NFL at 2-0. Their ability to be deep at running back certainly helps them. And what Philip Lindsay did yesterday obviously is a nice performance. But there's real flaws there. What do you make of the Packers and the Vikings? I know that you love the Vikings. And I like the Vikings a lot, too.
I just think they're a more complete team. I think when you rely that heavily on Aaron Rodgers and the fall off in the numbers is that substantial with your backup, whoever, you know, Kaiser, I just think overall, you know, the Vikings are a more complete team. And I think you saw it.
There's only one thing that separates them, in my opinion. It's defense. The Vikings are superior defensively, even with the issues at corner, where they had those blown coverages that I think cost them the game yesterday. But you're so good up front. The interesting component on that defense that I was a little surprised to see yesterday when they blitzed Harrison Smith from the end.
He got lit up.
Yeah, that secondary is not deep enough to contain that. And I think that limits their ability to blitz Smith until they get corners that can step up, because when Harrison's down in the box, they're very clearly Aaron Rodgers was diagnosing that, taking a 5-step drop, hoping that he got picked up that blitz, and they did. And he threw the ball over the top, and it killed the Vikings in several situations. So I think that's to be determined. The Bucs are 2-0. I really like them, although that division's a meat grinder.
Yeah.
I mean, the Falcons. How about the Falcons? even without Devontae Freeman, they were able to run the ball for 100 yards. Mm-hmm. I don't like Carolina at all. I still maintain that Cam Newton's just not a great leader. The Saints are one. That whole division is just going to be a meat grinder. Yeah. And then the LA Rams are 2-0, and I still think they're the best team.
It's close. It's very close. I'm going to take – I'm still taking the Vikings right now because I think, you know, your defensive analysis there is very good. I think that's spot on. We were talking about that the whole game. But I think overall, when you compare teams like, you know, the Vikings against the Packers, Vikings have more firepower. Vikings against the Rams, I still think the Vikings have more firepower overall, but I think that Rams defense neutralizes that. When you have that dominant of a defense...
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, what is Diggs going to do against the Rams defense? What does Thielen do against the Rams defense? I don't know. Well, I'm just saying it's much, much closer.
Peters and Tlaib are just ass-kickers.
Savages, dude.
They're just ass-kickers. Yeah. And it's so hard to... Those matchups, it's a step. And really, if it's, let's say it's Tlaib and Diggs, that's a step.
That's where AB is earning his money, making that catch.
Great point. I totally agree with you. Tomorrow on the show, we will be very heavy college football. Of course, we are going to talk all about that BYU game. What a win for them at Wisconsin. Not to say I told you so, but 4-0 in picks in college didn't do...
You fire me up, bro.
Didn't do jack in the NFL.
Dialed in.
We lost our ass, including our pants, in the NFL. But thank God we had a good college day. We'll talk all about the BYU situation. The situation in the Pac-12 is a mess. Whatever. It is what it is. We'll do our power rankings in the NFL on Wednesday.
Power rankings.
It's Big Football, The Monty Show. Make sure you find us on Twitter, MONTY, The Monty Show. Find us online, themontyshow.com. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.